What's going on, everybody? It's been an extremely long time, but welcome back to the Tony V Project. We are at episode 15. Like I said, it's been probably a month, 6 weeks. I'm pretty much going to put all of the blame here on Chris, since he's the man I've been wanting to get in here, bugging the crap out of him forever and ever and ever. Finally got him in. I've been dying to get this guy here to get in front of the camera and tell his story. It is super rad and just kind of embodies everything that we like to talk about on the show and just that I like to talk about in general. Quick reminder for anybody, since it's been such a long time, the Tony V Project, the concept is basically that we're trying to inspire people to action through other people's stories, whether it be through stories of struggle, stories of success, any and all of it. And like I said, this guy's story is that to a T. So excited to have him on here, my buddy Chris New. Welcome, brother.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Give a little background on yourself and all that stuff.
Copy. I am Chris New. I'm a chef. I currently own a catering company called Locally Grown in Motion Picture. I've been cooking for 15 years. Currently reside in Paso Robles, California, and work here in Los Angeles. So I drive back and forth.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
And we were up there actually not too long ago for anybody that knows.
Yeah. And we cooked for your entire staff.
Yeah, it was honestly, hands down, one of the best meals we ever had up there for a little company getaway retreat, wine tasting, and a little stop off. And you guys took awesome care of us. So
yeah, I mean, that was the goal. I mean, we have a family, side note, owns a small vineyard called Mystic Hills in Paso Robles, and we make wine. And so I'm the chef of that vineyard as well. And we host groups like yourselves and family friends, obviously you're a family member with us and one of our founding members, I think.
So you told me the number when we were up there.
I think you're number one. I think you're number one. Are we your number
one?
I know
it's single digits. Yes. That I know for
I think
a fact.
You're like
it was definitely single digits.
Top five. Easy. But I'll have to ask my mother-in-law.
We'll go with number one though.
Yeah, we'll go with number one. I think you were.
This is a total random side note. Is it Robles?
Paso Robles.
So Robles.
Yeah, it means the Pass of the Oaks.
Ah,
there's a lot of oak trees in Paso. So,
been
there since 2004, 2005, been there.
Okay.
Almost 15 years.
So. Right on.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, again, this guy's story, I actually, Pat Dietz, who most of you guys all know, he's the one who actually told me, I believe, about it prior to, he was either right after that
trip.
And he was like, hey, do you know Chris's story? And I've known Chris back since high school and his brother and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, no, not really. And he kind of gave me a rundown of it. And I was blown away. And at that point, I kind of immediately reached out and wanted to get you on here. But long story short, and I'll have him go into detail on how he got to where he was at. But I've talked a lot in the past about just the idea of not only understanding your value, just in terms of, I think a lot of people misconstrue the idea or the concept of value as like, what am I worth like right now? So like, oh, I'm worth $40 an hour or $60 an hour and da da da. But value needs to be more looked at like what your long term value, like what are you doing? Not so that you get paid right this second, but what's your value? Like, what are you doing for your value 20 years from now,
planning
30 years from now. Yeah, like
seeds.
Exactly.
Yep.
That, look, I'll work for free right now so that, you know, I'll delay that immediate gratification for that long-term benefit.
Sure.
And you took that to a whole new height. And I'm excited for you to, in your own words, kind of tell us what you did.
Sure. So I got married at a young age, technically young at 23 years old. I grew up in a family that cooked. My mother liked to cook. My grandfather was a big cook, Eastern European. And I kind of grew up in the kitchen, let's say. Didn't really find my way until one day I was at home making a chocolate cake because I was watching Tyler Florence on Food Network. And I just said, one day I'm going to go out and buy all these ingredients and start making a cake. My mom came home, long story short, my brothers, I had it all done. It did not look like anything like Tyler Florence's cake. And they laughed at me and joked. But that was kind of the first step in understanding failure and making something and having it turn out the way you want. Fast forward, my father-in-law inspired me and pushed me to go to culinary school. So I enrolled at Cordon Bleu in 2002 or 2003. in Pasadena. Went through the program. From there, I moved to San Francisco. My wife was living in Los Angeles, and I was renting a flat in San Francisco and worked for free for 4 months or 5 months at the Ritz-Carlton. They didn't offer paid externships, but I felt like, and you said earlier, to set your foundation to the long-term goal. There's a lot of kids that went to school with that didn't. They were going to get jobs at Chili's or Applebee's, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I felt like if I'm going to put the time and effort and the money to go to this school and learn classically trained, I wanted to make sure I was getting into the best of the best.
So how'd you do that? So you worked there for free, so it was like an internship kind of a thing?
I had to interview on the phone, and they didn't accept everybody. I mean, Ritz-Carlton's a big company, and I went through an interview process on the phone, had to drive up there and meet with the chefs of the kitchens and the executive of the entire hotel, and they offered me an opportunity to come work for free, and I did every single day.
I love that. Yeah. An opportunity to work for free.
Oh, well, it's the first of many.
It is, yeah, exactly.
It's the first of many opportunities. From there, I moved to Paso Robles with my wife based on wine and the vineyard. I worked at Justin Vineyards and Winery for a while with a good friend of mine, Will Torres. I got an opportunity. Well, I was applying. I've always wanted to work at this restaurant called The French Laundry. And so
that's a famous, like, I'm not a, yeah, that rings a bell.
It's one of the top 50 restaurants in the world.
Yeah.
Was number one at the time in North America, number one ranking by Food and Wine and blah, blah, blah. I applied there first before the Ritz, and I got denied. I put that in my back pocket, saying, okay, we'll revisit that down the road.
Again, from like a free, work there for free. Like, just, everything is work for free. Like,
and the industry's changed, and we can talk about that later, but then, and still to this day, I guess to a small point, you got in those kitchens by offering your service for free. And you did whatever it took to get into that. So I got denied there and ended up going to the Ritz. Down the road, I ended up applying to the Laundry. I would send my resume out once a month, every month, with a follow-up email every month. Persistence for seven and a half months, I did that. The same time, I was applying to a restaurant called Lenia in Chicago. In July, I remember that year, I got a letter from the French Laundry saying, unfortunately, we cannot help you out with your request. You're more than welcome to come and do a tour of the kitchen and see the place. I had already eaten there once or twice before, but that was a big letdown. And I didn't let it get to me because it was a blessing in disguise, but 2 days later I got an email from Grant Agates, from the executive chef, and he's one of the best chefs in the world to this day, and said, you're welcome to come to Chicago anytime you want. Come as long as you want, stay as long as you want. So I talked to my wife and my in-laws, and the support system I had around me, which is crucial too, to getting to where you want to be.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law paid for me to fly to Chicago and put me up in a hotel, and I went to Chicago and traveled there and stayed. It wasn't a very long process. I was there enough to be immersed inside these kitchen, that kitchen especially, that was just operating on a whole different level that I was striving so hard to see and achieve in myself, because I knew.
Like, what do you mean?
Go ahead.
Like, no, like, what do you mean, like, because that interests me. Obviously, I don't know the restaurant food industry, so like,
the attention to detail, the integrity, the camaraderie, the hard work. I mean, when you walked in that kitchen at 10 a.m.,
it was go time.
You didn't walk in and shake hands and drink coffee and talk. I mean, when I walked in the kitchen, there were 30 guys in this kitchen busting their butt.
Yeah.
From nonstop, from the minute we got there till the time we got off at 2 o'clock in the morning. The very first day that I found very inspiring in a way was my sous chef, who I reported to that day, got hit by a car on his bike driving to work. And he was in a full vest and drinking codeine on the line. I said, dude, why don't you go home? He said, you don't go here. You don't go home. You're here. If I go home, I don't have a job.
Yeah.
Unless I'm dying.
Yeah.
But I have to be here. I have a huge responsibility. And so to walk into an environment like that where it was intense. I mean, you're being recognized as one of the best restaurants in the world. There is no room for error or screw up, you know. You're on board. You have to be on board, and you have to be 100% committed to it. And that sets the precedent to everything that it's taught me in terms of organization, cleanliness, respect for your people who work for you, teaching the youth, teaching the younger cooks there coming through. And I was a young 20, at that time I was 27 years old, just wanting to grab on to what the best of the best were doing, because you only get better by working with people who are better than you.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So during that time, you're working for free.
Yes.
And so the story you told me, like at times, like you were sleeping in your car if you needed to.
Well, I came back from Chicago and I opened up, I was at that point in time kind of, I'll be honest, cocky.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, I just came off this stunt. I'm ready. I was offered an opportunity to open a restaurant in Paso. Paso was very small town, country town, and I was bringing this big city food to the city or to the area, and they weren't ready for it. And so I failed.
Yeah.
I gave up halfway through. I didn't give up. I moved on because I knew there was a lot going on behind the scenes too. There was difference in opinions and views of how the place should be ran by the ownership. So I applied again to the French Laundry and Ad Hoc and the Thomas Keller Restaurant Group, and I got that call one day to say, hey, would you like to come work at Ad Hoc, which was his family-style restaurant. It wasn't the laundry, but it was to get my foot in the door.
Yeah.
My wife at that time, we had our first kid. She refused to move to Napa because she'd been bouncing around a little bit with me through my other travels. And I said, okay. So we drove up there, and I interviewed with the chef again, and he offered me a job. And I told him my circumstance, and I didn't have a place to live. So he told me, like, I need you to start in 2 weeks. I said, I got nowhere to go. And my wife was doing some research. She found a place, but wasn't able to move in until like 3 months later. And so he says, sous chef Johnny here will let you sleep on his couch. So I said, okay. So I packed my car full of clothes and sleeping bag and a pillow. And I was able to sleep on his couch and shower there. And I never let the other roommates know that I was there. I always cleaned my stuff up, packed my car every morning because I didn't want it to be I will use the word burden on them. So yeah, I did that and did that for quite some time. I would work 5 days a week there, living on the couch out of my car, turn around and drive back down to Paso, see my new daughter and my kid and my wife for 2.5 days and get back up and drive right back to Napa Valley and do it all over again. So
that's wild, man.
I did that in Vegas. I did that.
So how many restaurants in total did you do that? Like work for free, do what you needed to do to learn and all of that?
Four of them, four restaurants, four places. And then I did a lot of stages with people and like big time chefs that I had opportunities to do. So I'd go help work with them. My friend Chris Starkus, if you remember Chris Starkus from the Valencia, he was a chef at the Wynn Hotel. And there was a 2-star Michelin chef at the time named Alex Strada. And he says, hey, I got an opportunity. So I said, okay. So I went to Vegas and worked in this kitchen for a couple of days. It was all about putting just these little pieces together to understand how the greats do it and the successful people do it, because they are, that's my mentors in a way, I guess you would say. Those are that's my inspiration to see, okay, these guys are successful. Why are they successful? What was their plan and how did they do it? And obviously they had people around them to help them get there.
And so what are you picking up? Like, when you, obviously you don't know initially what you're going to learn, but like when you walked out of all of it, like what did you pick up? What did you learn that was so impactful?
Attention to detail is so important, especially in the food business, and cleanliness and organization, people getting sick. I mean, just the food handling. And these kitchens were $1 million kitchens. It wasn't like in the back of a little hotel, not hotel, but like a little restaurant that's dirty and disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, these things were cleaned at all times. We're cooking on $100,000 Bonet stoves, cleaning every 45 minutes, sweeping trash, and people would come in the kitchen. You always wanted to be like we were never there.
Yeah.
It was always clean, and you never were dirty. Your apron was always clean. That's attention to detail. Starting the service off clean, ending the service clean.
Yeah.
So, and to me, the organizational thing too transcends into everything else. If you're clean and organized in your mind, it kind of translates into everything else that you do in terms of when it comes to food and plating.
Yeah.
The area around you is not messy. I mean, you've got all this crap around you. Your mind is
in that same,
in that same, it's crap.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you gonna, how's your presentation on whatever you're serving to the people gonna be any better?
But that transcends to anything. If you have an organized mind, you put everything on paper, and that's a skill set that's learned. It's not in everybody.
Yeah.
But I think surrounding yourself with people who are like-minded like that, definitely train. It's like going in the military.
Yeah.
They train you and they whip you into shape and you come out a different person. And these kitchens are very militant in a way too. They follow that code and hierarchy and chef, sous chef, chef de cuisine. You know, I mean, it's just, it's very, very interesting to see and be a part of, you know. And it motivated me to just want to push myself to be that, you know. So
it's super ironic and funny that you mentioned the whole military thing. And I didn't really know much about this guy that I'm about to go into. You heard of David Goggins?
David Goggins. No, but I've heard of him, but I don't know of him.
So I was randomly watching or listening to like a brief clip of a Joe Rogan podcast the other day. And then I watched, what's the guy's name? He invented or was the founder of Quest Bar. He also has a podcast. The guy from Quest had this guy, Goggins, on his podcast. And long story short, this guy was overweight growing up, out of shape, picked on. He's a black guy, was telling a story about how he grew up in this like southern neighborhood where he was called the N-word, you know, his entire life growing up. So basically he just had like super low self-esteem for a very long period of time, was going nowhere in his life. And then for whatever reason, he said that he watched something that like literally turned his mind around, and he realized, look, like I'm going to stop feeling sorry for myself and do something about it. And he's like now like this ridiculous ultra marathoner. He like holds a world record for like pull-ups and all this stuff. He's like this super fit guy, and now he's like a motivational speaker, and he like works with some of like the biggest CEOs. Like he'll go, you know, on a like a 1 month stay, and he'll like literally follow these presidents of whatever companies and walk them through their day and make them like get like one of them like has this thing up in Aspen. So he would literally like wake up in the morning, like woke whatever CEO up and told them, all right, it's 3 a.m, get up. And they went to the fucking frozen lake. He like took like a rock, like broke open the lake, and he's like, jump in. And then he went in first, and then the guy went in after. But his whole concept and philosophy centers around the idea that to succeed, you must first suffer.
Sure.
And he was in the military, that was his outlet. Like one of the first things that, you know, when he's like, I need to do something about my life, he got in the military, and he's like the first ever to be like an Army Ranger and a Navy SEAL and like two or three of like the top things. And so he's like, to be successful or to find any success, you first have to suffer.
Sure.
And I was thinking about it, and like, you think about it across all walks of life, and it makes perfect sense. Sure. I mean, even something as simple as working out, like here at Afterburn. I mean, to get, like, you have to put yourself through pain to get better.
Sure.
You have to sleep in fucking cars and on people's couches and work for free to be able to gain the knowledge to get better at what you do. Like, there's just so much, like, it's, at the end of the day, it's sacrifice for, again, sacrifice now for payout down the line.
Sure.
How do you, I believe in it fully, you clearly live by it.
Sure.
What do you think is the difference between the people that get it and that don't get it? Again, not to talk bad about, like you said, the people who go to work at Chili's, but like, what do you think, okay, so like there's two people. They've had the same, relatively same upbringing. One person is like, I'm going to earn zero and sleep in cars so the long term. And the other one's like, well, I got to make $20 so I can go get drinks with my friends this weekend. And so they take the easier route, which obviously has less of a long term payout. How do you think that?
I think it comes down to like drive, where you see yourself, like you said earlier, where do you see yourself in 20 years? I think now people get caught up, they have to have the now. They're not willing to put the work in. When I was 20-something years old, I wanted it now too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm young and I'm adventurous and I'm eager to support my family. And granted, I had a wife at the time and a young daughter. And so trying to figure out financials to support my family. But at the same time, I think a support system, and I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I'll just go down this direction. The support system for me was crucial to my success to where I am now, because I had people who were understanding me, who were pushing me, who were not letting me take the easy way and saying, you know what, I'll just take a job for $20 an hour and see where it takes me. But that wasn't in my heart either. Like, I wanted more.
Yeah.
And I didn't know where that was going to take me. And through life and trials and tribulations and successes and failures, you kind of figure out where that map takes you. But at the same time, things change. My ideals and where I was going with my career changed when I got to my 30s, because I didn't realize that that wasn't my career path anymore. And those things changed. My drive and my goal and where I wanted to be changed. I think the youth now, and I'll say the youth, they just want it now. They're not willing to put the hard work in to try to suffer, to learn from the people who have done it, who've done it better, and to learn from that and take, we call it wisdom, right? To take the wisdom from the people who have done it better. And hopefully I answered your question. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but no, for sure. I mean, and I think, I'm wondering if part of it also, because it kind of ties into what you're saying, I look at it like this. I look at it, how much of a role does potentially ego, and I'm not saying like egotistical as in like literally narcissism as in someone who truly believes that they're the greatest ever, but like a cover up ego. Because at some point you have to, there's some element of that where you're willing, right? And to, again, make $0. So that when you go to pick up the girl at the bar, you know what I mean? You're like, and she's like, so what do you do? You're like, I work for free and I sleep on someone's couch. You know what I mean? But that doesn't prevent you, that other people's opinion of you isn't preventing you from really going down the path you want to go to. Rather than I wonder how much of that plays. Like, I don't want to look bad. Whether it be on social media, like, you know what I mean? I don't look like I have a job. I can go out and party with my buddies.
Because people care about what other people think.
For sure. More than they need to, or they should.
You're not focused on you.
Yeah.
You have to be focused on you because only you, I don't mean that in a selfish way, but only you is going to take yourself to where you need to be. I recircle the family and friends and the support and the foundation because I think that's really crucial to have that. I think families and their kids, you have to support and push that. Yes, they're going to suffer. I'm not saying hold their hand the entire way, but to push them out the door and say, you know what, this is going to be tough.
Yeah.
This is how it's going to be. Either you succumb to the world or you're going to knock the world on its butt.
Yeah.
So you have to really push. I use the word push a lot.
Yeah.
Push yourself. And it all comes from inside. Either you have it and you want it or you don't.
Yeah.
Really at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I talk about it a lot in the book, obviously. It's the whole idea of just, again, perseverance, grit, determination. In the book, and actually, according to some studies, they looked at, they controlled for as many variables as you can in a study about what the thing that most correlates to success is. But with whatever studies that they, or whatever study that they did, what they found was that determination, grit, perseverance, whatever you want to call it, that was the factor that was most closely linked to success. More than anything else, more than how smart you are, more than the financial upbringing that you had, or social, you know, status, whatever. Sure. That, again, you're willing to fail, you're willing to lose, you're willing to eat shit, you're willing to do all that stuff. Over and over and over again. Like, you're just willing to get punched in the face continuously. And it doesn't fucking matter. Like, you just keep going.
It's hard.
It is. Oh, and it's not, and it's not easy. It's super hard.
Yeah. I mean, a man has an ego. You say ego, but men have an ego internal to be successful.
Yeah.
And you're a leader of your family.
And you're supposed to be.
Sure. And so to check yourself. And there was a lot of self-doubt. There was always like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I'm a 27-year-old man living with my in-laws. I don't own my own home. I drive a beat-up Chevy Malibu, and my friends are driving CLSs. What am I doing wrong? I don't have the money to go out.
Yeah.
But I said, you know what? I kept telling myself, I'm going to see it through, because I know there's got to be something down the road that's going to, the door's just going to open and the stars are going to align. I mean, maybe that's corny, but I just had that inside me. And I had, like I said, my family just always in my ear, just keep doing it. It's going to pay off.
But I think that's important too, because I think it's important for people to hear, like you say also, that look, like, I fucking questioned it all the time. Because I mean, it would be, because otherwise people would think that, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you're going through all this shit, but like, it doesn't bother you. Like, no, fuck yeah. Like, you are questioning it 24/7 the entire time.
Why am I working on a Friday night till midnight with my friends out? I mean, you say you're drinking, but I'm, you know, 27 years old. My wife's out having a good time with family and friends, and I'm stuck in the kitchen till 12, 2 o'clock in the morning. I get home and they're all asleep.
Yeah.
I get up and do it all over again. I missed birthday parties. I've missed weddings. I've missed just family engagements because I chose to be there and learning my craft, my art, then instead of wasting time, or we'll use that word, wasting time at a party with friends who were, you know, doing their normal day-to-day routine.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I talked about this, I think about a week or two ago. I'm doing those like mindset minute things now every few days. And it was about the marshmallow test. I don't know if you saw that one.
No.
So marshmallow test, And again,
I do follow you. I'm just saying.
No,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But the marshmallow test is, it's a real thing. It sounds goofy and funny, but it was a legitimate study again done, and it was done with kids. I don't know the exact age, but young.
Sure.
You know what I mean? 5, 6, somewhere around there, maybe even younger. And it was as simple as, all right, you have two choices. You can have one marshmallow right now, or if you wait an hour, I'll give you two marshmallows. And as rudimentary as that sounds, they, you know, recorded what the kid chose and then literally tracked them for 20 years or 30 years. And what they found was that the correlation between the kid that picked two marshmallows later, their rate of success was like significantly higher than the kid was that wanted it right now. And so that begs the question, is there something that's literally like innate? Is that kind of mentality, is it teachable? And if it is teachable, it's something that's taught very early on.
I think culture's changed that. I think the culture in the society we live in now has changed that. Kids are getting what they want now. NBA stars are getting huge contracts now. I mean, Michael Jordan had an interview he did a couple years ago on Oprah, and he said, you know, Barkley and Worthy and I had to work for a long time to get those kind of contracts. Now they're just getting them right out of high school.
That still blows me away. Yeah.
You know, and so I think a lot of the today the culture is defined the have now, not putting my time in and work hard to maybe or not maybe to get to that point where I'm going to have the better things in life or whatever that may be if you put the hard work in now. I do think it's just a cultural thing now with social media and the influences and maybe it's starting. I think it starts at home too. I mean, I came from an immigrant family, hard work. My grandfather was a heavy bulldozer, you know, did landfills and built homes. He built half Santa Clarita back in the day.
No kidding?
Oh, yeah, he drove big machinery. But, you know, I just think it starts in the house. It starts in the family. It starts with the father and the dad and the mom being leaders and teaching their kids. This is the way it works. If they're not connected to that, then there's no foundation being laid for mom and dad setting the tone.
Yeah.
For me, it starts at home. I've already set the foundation with my kids. They know. You know, where I stand and how the families are going to operate and what's the expectation of them because I want to see them be successful.
Yeah.
I want them to work hard. It's not going to be given to you.
Do you find that, because obviously I don't have kids yet.
Sure.
But I mean, I can only imagine that's got to be something that for a parent, like internally, is hard because here's your kid. You want to provide for him, give them X,
sure.
Y, and Z.
Sure.
But you also know that for them to succeed, that it can't all just be handed. And so you have to go against what you want to do necessarily,
sure,
for what you know needs to be done.
Yeah, but how do you, and for me, my wife and I always, how do we bring that message to them at this time in their life? I can't just be blunt and direct about it, but I take it to like my daughter with softball. There's times where she doesn't want to do it. She doesn't want to go to practice that day. She didn't want to do travel ball. My wife was like, no, you're going to stick to this, you've committed to this, you're going to finish the commitment and you're going to finish it and you're going to put the time in. And at the end, when it's all said and done, you know, look back and be like, wow, it was worth sticking to that commitment and not giving up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, an 11-year-old daughter understanding these kind of conversations, probably not, but
in their own world,
holding her accountable to those things
and
teaching her hard work. And when she reaches that level, then as she gets older, those are the foundations and the building blocks to set the expectation that when she turns 18, goes to college, goes out in the real world, I'm hoping that these are the blocks that will help her step into that. And all three of them, I got three daughters. So I mean,
I was going to say, how old are your kids?
I got a 4-year-old, soon to be 5, freshly turned 7, and an 11-year-old. So I got 3 girls. I keep them busy, you know. I mean, we've got horses, and so we're teaching them how to take care of them and being responsible, and you know, they fight it a lot, like any kid who doesn't want to do chores.
Yeah.
So, you know, but just trying to set the foundation for hard work and just finishing what you started, I guess, really at the end of the day. So,
what do you think is another topic that I talk about in my book, and we talked about it briefly when I was talking down at the gym when we were first trying to coordinate this. In one of the later chapters, I talk about the idea of that whole concept of It's not about what you know, but who you know. Sure. And I think, you know, I think it's true.
Sure.
But I talk about in the book how I don't think it's true for a lot of the reasons people think it's true.
Sure.
So, yes, having connections and knowing X, Y, you know, this person or that person, like, you know, and networking, like, that matters, right?
But when you get that opportunity, what you do with that opportunity?
Well, for 100%. Yeah, exactly. That gets your foot in the door, but then are you going to fall flat on the face? Are you going to actually follow through with it?
Sure.
But two, coming along with the who you know, again, you're not talking about, when you're talking about who you know, I mean, you're generally talking about people, again, that are at the upper echelon of whatever industry or whatever, knowledge-wise, success-wise.
Sure.
So there is knowledge there.
Sure.
And so who you know has a direct impact on what you know.
Sure.
And so at the end of the day, a lot of it comes back to what you know. And so, again, like, you knowing that when it comes to, like, hey, these chefs, like, you're seeking them out for what they know.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so it's not just about networking. It's about the knowledge gained and then what you do with it after the fact, like you said.
Yes.
Because otherwise, an open door will shut real quickly if you ain't doing anything with it.
Yeah, if you get you get into a kitchen like that, and the first day you burn stuff and you're breaking $100 plates, you're probably not going to be asked to come back
yeah.
the next day. Or if you show up late or you're lazy or, you know, whatever, when you get that opportunity, you seize the day and make it work and work harder than everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, within those kitchens, it's about competition. You know, when you're the newbie in there and you walk in and everyone's looking at you and they've put their time in, why do you deserve to be there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got in, chef's here, he's accepted you in, but you want to be part of this inner circle, this group of cooks in this kitchen, you're going to have to work harder than all of us to prove
yeah.
it. So that was the drive behind it too, is just
yeah.
hard work. Work harder than the guy next to me because I want that. I want his position.
Right.
I want his position. You
did,
know?
Did you see it in any of the restaurants or anything that you went to?
Sure.
Were you ever like one of several chefs that were there, you know, on a internship working for free or anything
sure,
like that?
Yeah. When I was at Alinea, I was one of eight, and they were from all over the world.
And any of those instances, did you watch or see anyone literally like fail, get kicked out?
Well, I mean,
that
well
didn't
going
work?
Into a kitchen that intense, the first day I was there, there was a guy that was, I want to say, from somewhere in like Jamaica or something like that. And he was spilling all over the floor. He was cleaning porcini mushrooms and all the shavings were going all over the floor. And that was not allowed in that kitchen. You don't spill on the floor, you don't spill on yourself, right? So the sous chef walks over and goes, you better clean that shit up right now before he loses it. Because the chef was standing right there because it just wasn't tolerated.
Yeah.
But he didn't know the expectation.
Yeah.
It wasn't set for him. It was the first 20 minutes in the kitchen. But he learned very fast
yeah.
that's not what you want to do. You slam the oven door, the entire kitchen would look at you because it was quiet.
Yeah.
You don't slam the oven doors and everyone would just stare. And you learned through the process.
Yeah.
But I did see people, yes, make mistakes, but it's also a new environment and you learn from that and just don't do it again.
That's crazy, man. I mean, outside of that obviously unbelievably massive message that you just delivered, I mean, is there anything else that you, whether it's from you, experience that you've had within your business or as a father, et cetera, that you would like to impart on others?
I just feel like...
Siri, we are in the middle of a podcast, Siri.
I think don't live in fear. Don't have doubt. You know, believe in yourself. Surround yourself with people who are like-minded. Surround your people with people who are positive, who are going to support you. I use that word a lot, a support group, because I've had a lot of support from family and friends. And I feel like if you work hard, and you put your nose down to, or your head down to the grind, you're gonna see the positive come out in the end. It's worth the sweat, the blood, the tears, the trials, the tribulations, the fighting with the wife, the lack of financials. You know, it eventually does work out if
yeah.
you do it the right way. So I just feel like, you know, hard work pays off.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it, you know, perseverance.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, surrounding yourself. Like, negativity kills. Like, I will believe that
sure.
until the end of time. And again, like, get rid of your that chapter that I was talking about earlier
sure.
is called Get Rid of Your Loser Friends.
Yep.
and surround yourself with people. Like, there are certain people that are going to be fortunate, like yourself and myself. Like, I consider myself, I don't come from this background where I had, like, parents who shit on me, or, you know, asshole friends that were always trying to hold me back. Like, I had a good support system too. But, like, if you don't, like, you've got to do whatever it takes to go seek them out. Sure. And find them, because it does, man. It matters who is around you, because they will build you up, or they will tear you down.
Exactly. And so that's, I think you've done that. I've done that. I've got good people around me, and that's all I can really ask for, because I know when I need them, they're there to help me through those moments.
Yeah.
And I have someone to talk to, someone to turn to, from my mom to my mother-in-law to my brother-in-law to my wife, obviously, who's my biggest support system. So, you know, I do agree with you on that one. For sure.
Thanks, man.
You're very welcome.
Well, Jeremy.
You have any questions?
You got any questions, Jay?
No, man,
that was an awesome, I've been wanting to get that for a long time. So
no, I appreciate
the fact
it.
That you made it on here, was definitely all worthwhile to get you on here and tell that story.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you for having
me.
Hopefully it made sense to in a way.
Yeah. You know, so. I think if it doesn't, then
too late.
Rewatch it four times, whatever it takes.
We'll edit you out.
Delay immediate gratification for that long term benefit. That's the message. That's episode 15. Chris, thank you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Jay, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And we'll be back soon. Sure. Later, guys.
Peace.
Thanks, man.